We're talking home renovation, repair, water, and inspection issues here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, specializing in residential renovation projects. Ken, welcome back.
It's good to be here. Nice to see you both again.
Yeah, and John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg consults for historic restoration projects, water and mold litigation. He's a Wisconsin registered home inspector. And John, great to see you too.
Wonderful to be back, Larry.
Are you guys busy? John, are you busy?
Tremendously busy.
Yeah, well, that's good news. Yes. I probably. How about you, Ken?
Well, I'm busy, and it seems to be that most of my competitors are busy. You know, we had that slump in the middle of November, and you know, people being a little skittish about doing things, and we've been slowly building, and it's looking like a really good summer, and keeping the momentum in the fall. It's very nice.
Very nice. Well, in our online community of listeners, we posed the question, are you more likely to buy a different home or remodel? So that's a question that if you're listening in and you want to join us online and put your remarks in online about that, we'd love to hear from you. Maybe I'll pull some of those up as we move along. I also wanted to mention, this is totally unrelated to this program, but our garden talk show tomorrow, we're asking people to send us some garden veggie dish to pass recipes. It's the, you know, it's the picnic season. Let's and it's the season of tomatoes and all the great vegetables. So go online to our online community of listeners at WPR.org and give us your favorite recipe relating to vegetables. And now back to the topic at hand here. Let's go to Sherry in La Crosse. Sherry's got a question or comment. Hi, Sherry.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, thanks for calling.
We live in a small, older home in La Crosse, and we recently had the house rewired, and the wiring is in the attic. So we finally got up in the attic, and there's hardly any insulation in there. So we're going to put rolls of buy the rolls and put the insulation in there. And my question is, do you put the insulation over the beams, too, or you try to get it just in between the beams, and also the wiring is running through in the middle of the beams. Do you have to do anything about that?
Sherry, what you want to do first is make sure that you have no more knob and tube wiring in there. It sounds like everything's been updated.
Yes, it just was completely redone.
Great, and you might want to think about, instead of using fiberglass bad insulation, you may want to think about putting in some cellulose insulation. That's blown in. You can buy the insulation at your local lumber yard, and most of the time they'll either rent or loan you the equipment to blow it in.
Uh-huh.
It's considered a green product. It's a lot safer and healthier for the environment and for your lungs, and it has very good R values. There's a couple other things that you want to consider, too. Do you have roof ventilation in your attic, in your roof, or in your soffits?
I think so.
Yeah, well,
you might want to check that.
Yeah, you might want to check that, because you're required, and it's very sound. This is very smart to have adequate ventilation. There's a formula. It's about 1 square foot of ventilation for every 300 square foot of surface area.
Okay.
And half of that has to be on the soffit, has to be low, and the other half has to be up high.
Okay.
The reason I'm telling you to do this is you want to make sure that you have this before you insulate, because once you pour your insulation or roll your bats in, you'll never be able to get to the point to get your low-end ventilation in. Is that helpful?
Yes. Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Laura in Holman next. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a moisture question, I guess.
Okay.
We live in what was originally a log cabin, and it has been built onto over the years, and I'm assuming it's at least 80 years old, and it's mainly a slab foundation, and I think we have moisture problems because you can smell, it smells like a basement all the time, essentially, and we're going to pull the carpeting back in the living room, and that's right on top of concrete, and I'm wondering if we need to put in a subfloor or what we need to do when we pull that carpeting up.
All right, let's go to John. John Freiberger.
Well, with the concrete floor with carpet over it, it's possible that that carpet insulates the floor and the floor transfers heat out enough that the floor actually is going to condense moisture out. And, of course, you've got dust and animal dander and other things underneath that worked into that carpet, so you're going to end up with mold. So I think having a vapor barrier down over that floor and then maybe some sleepers and then a floor over the top of that would be a way of solving it. We really try to avoid direct application of carpet to concrete floors.
Yeah, that's what this was done so long ago, we got to pull it up. And my husband's closet, we pulled the carpet off of that, and it's concrete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got to get a vapor barrier down there.
Right.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Lynette in Hubertus, we're on to you. Hi, Lynette.
Hello. I have a question about my well and pump and the pressure tank. A couple weeks ago, I overwatered some outdoor plants. The pump was going too much, and we lost pressure, so we repressured the pressure tank, and we're at about 40 to 65 on the high end. And the reason we knew that we had lost the pressure was that it seemed like the pump was continuously kicking on.
Okay.
It would kick on and come off and kick on with no water running at all. So now everything seems to be fine. It's not running anymore. But every time we use some water in the house, whether it's the shower, the toilet, or sink, there's this hammering sound coming from, I think, near the gauge of the pressure tank or maybe the lateral that comes into the house.
Air pocket of some sort.
Yep. Yeah, air hammering.
Yeah.
I suspect that when you were pulling a lot of water from this well that you maybe ended up dropping the water table near the pickup point, and you ended up sucking a lot of air. And we have a lot of air in the system, maybe too much air in the pressure tank itself. So you're probably going to have to bleed some air out of the system. It is not something that I'm an expert on, other than when I have problems with my own my own well. So you may have to call your well person to make sure that you've got the correct amount of air. Pressure tanks, many of them also have air bladders in them, and if an air bladder breaks or splits, then you can end up with air getting into the system. The idea of the bladder is the bladder expands and contracts without letting air into the pipes. So there's a couple of things there to check, which I think are pretty hard to diagnose
over
the phone here.
Mm-hmm.
So your advice is to get a person who digs wells, works with wells?
Well, whoever has been servicing their well should probably come out.
Okay.
I mean, well water should be tested regularly. Well should be inspected regularly, and whoever their local person is the best person to look at it.
All right. There you go, Lynette. Good luck, Marilyn in Montford. We're on to you. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I have another well question.
Okay.
We're in Southwest Wisconsin, 325-foot well. Our water tested good, but we notice sometimes if you pour water into a glass pitcher, it looks fine at first, but then it an hour or so later, it starts looking rusty. Also, when you take a bath, the water looks good when you put it in, but it turns brown while you're taking your bath, and I wondered what's causing this, and how can it be remedied?
You know, iron deposits in southwest Wisconsin, I don't think it's
more likely to be
up north.
But might be some mineral, not necessarily iron. But have you had your water tested recently?
Not this year. It's only 2 years old.
Mm-hmm. Well, you might want to do that. Have it tested and see what sort of mineral. It sounds like a mineral deposit.
Yeah.
That's just slowly, churning out of the water, I guess, for lack of a better word. So have your water tested, you see what it is, and then you'll know what kind of filtering, if any, is required.
Yeah.
Okay.
They'll tell you what you need for a filter.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Well, we're whipping right through the calls here today. We've gone through quite a few already and more online, but there's still an open line or two. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. We'll turn to Tom next. Tom in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hello. Just a quick question. We've got an older ranch that the underside of the eaves had been put up with pine boards that were varnished, I'm assuming, when the house was built about 56 years ago. And over the years, that varnish has degraded, and I kind of like to clean that up and see if I can do something as far... You know, we've had water damage because of ice damming and things like that over the years where it's turned gray. And I'm looking for some suggestions on how to do that without, you know, turning it into a year-long project.
Okay. Well, what do you think?
Well, you could... is any of the wood rotten, or is there any staining?
Yeah, well, there is staining. I've replaced some of the boards that had decayed, and that's kind of led me to the point where I'm looking at it and saying, geez, it'd be nice to spruce this up. I mean, it really looks, it's a Lennon stone house, so the contrast is really kind of nice.
I'll bet you it's lovely. You know, do you know what kind of finish was on there? You said a varnish.
I'm assuming it was done in, and the house was built in 53. So I'm assuming that nobody has gone up there. We've been here for the last 30 years, and I've certainly done nothing. And I'm my guess is that nobody went up and did anything prior to that, but it's the original. And my assumption is that it's some type of varnish.
Now, Tom, are these pine boards?
Yeah, they're pine boards. They're the inch, if you can envision, it's the same thing that they would have used for like wainscoting.
Okay, so it's like you
got an inch and a half. It's a 3-inch board, but it's got a groove in the center, and then it's got two flat pieces, 3 inches tongue and groove.
Sure. Yeah, they call that beaded ceiling.
Yeah,
beaded ceiling board. Yeah,
yeah. Varnish on pine, I would be surprised if it was varnish, because if it were varnish, I would think it would all be flaking and falling off.
I wonder if it was an oil, like a linseed oil with a pigment or something.
That's exactly where I'm going, Ken. I think Tom might really be in luck, because if it is a non-layering oil, then you could use a tung oil or modified linseed oil or something, basically sort of recapitulate what was done originally, but... Boy, that's something, you know, if you look at it, very hard, again, to diagnose this. But I think, Tom, it might be worth calling a local restoration painter in and have them identify it. And if it is indeed simply an oil, because I can't think of anything layering that would last.
No,
they wouldn't have used shellac.
I'll bet you it's a linseed oil or something to that effect. Yeah. That was somewhat common back in that period. They'd pigment it sometimes.
That's right.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Of course, you can
to give you a little bit of information. Boards that were in a breezeway that we remodeled, and I saved them.
Good.
And I tried cleaning them up with sandpaper, and it just turned into a gummy mess.
Well, sounds like linseed oil.
Yeah. You know what you could do,
okay.
too? Is
so if, basically, all I have to do is, how would I clean that up? Alcohol or?
No, not alcohol. You'd probably just use, what I would start with is something like a bronze wool or a steel wool and a little bit of thinner, although it is working overhead and it's going to run down your arm. That would be a good way to start a heavy brush, but not a wire brush, you know, a heavy... nylon brush that can actually rough up the surface. I would, before you do that, I would take one of your pieces that you had in your porch and take it down to a local paint store and have them look at it, and maybe they could tell you definitely what the finish is, maybe even get you the product, the right product to match up to that. And start there and then back off, because they might be able to give you a little more fine-tuning fine-tuned advice on how to clean it and prep it.
Sure.
Okay, good luck to you.
Good luck.
Have fun.
Thanks.
It's going to be a fun, long project. I hope it doesn't
sure will
take
be.
A year.
Thanks, Tom. Diane in Appleton, we're on to you now. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I want to know what is the best way to go about installing a backup sump pump with some kind of battery or something in case... the electricity goes out and the original sump pump.
Don't you have one, Larry?
Not yet.
It's
been a dry summer.
Oh, I have another customer of mine lives on the lake, has a three sump pumps because he's He's always worried about it. One's a battery backup. They use the same pit for the battery backup as they use for the their normal unit, and it's hardwired in. I think they use one or two car batteries as their backup power. It's very simple. I don't think they're not more than several hundred dollars to buy and have a professional install them. You could probably get all the information you need online.
What kind of professional?
Well, plumbers are a plumber that's familiar with septic fields, or sometimes certain excavators, or what's the people that did your sump system around your
Yes. Well, I'm blanking for a minute, but it'll come to me.
Yeah, I need a noun advisor. I've gotten to the age where I need a noun advisor. But usually a plumber that's got some experience in sump pumps will be able to tell you right away what you need.
Yeah, shouldn't be a problem.
Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, my goodness, I can't remember the name of that company, but it'll come to me because they did a wonderful job. Let's go to Fritz and
what do they call the service, though?
That's what I'm trying to think. You know, I said, I went to them and said, I need a sump pump.
Thought of a great recipe for your for your vegetables.
Fritz and Oshkosh, it's on to you. Hi, Fritz.
How you doing?
Very good.
Good.
Okay, I am currently remodeling a 120-year-old house. I've been trying to make it as efficient as possible. I've insulated the attic. I can't remember the name of it anyway. I blew in a green cellulose in the attic, which has helped tremendously. But the walls, as I do each room, I'm insulating the walls, but there's no wrap on the outside, so obviously the wind is cutting through like a knife every winter. I am looking at putting on the 4x8 sheets of exterior foil wrapped insulation, and my question is, I have old, pretty much dilapidated shiplap siding. Should I tear that siding off, or should I insulate over the top of it?
Oh, all right. What do you say, John?
Well, we've got a couple of issues. First is you're going to need a vapor barrier on the inside of that house, because as you insulate those walls, if you don't put a vapor barrier in, you're going to get condensation, and that condensation will eventually affect the structure.
Mm-hmm.
I hate going over things. It makes a mess of the windows. Putting foam on the exterior is great because you get rid of all the thermal bridging, because you're going right over the face of the not only the sheathing but also of the studs and things that transmit heat out.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I would take a look at, because if you're going to put back on wood siding, which is expensive, I would take a look at putting a rain screen system on with a pre-finished cedar, so that that cedar is going to last another 120 years.
Okay.
It's going to cost a little bit more, but you will be able to get pre-finished materials with, 15-year? I think we even have a 20-year warranty now, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
With non-layering, you can make the house look the way it is now, except it'll be really green, it'll be really efficient, you'll have no wind washing through the walls, and you'll have extremely low maintenance.
Okay. I'm actually considering putting on vinyl siding, and so that won't be that's kind of a non-issue. I don't want to go back to wood just for the upkeep.
Sure.
But now, like I say, now some of the rooms were done before I got there as far as sheetrock,
mm-hmm.
Fiberglass insulation, and plastic sheeting.
Right.
But
if you're getting a lot of wind through those walls, Fritz, that suggests to me that whoever put up that visqueen sheeting didn't do a very good job.
Okay. All right. So any way other than tearing sheetrock off to do vapor barrier on the inside?
You simply use a vapor barrier paint.
Yes,
a slightly modified acrylic latex paint goes on like any other latex paint. Just check with the company to make sure that it is HUD certified as an interior vapor barrier. The
Excellent.
Department of Interior accepts that for historic houses that are on the National Register, so it's been long-term tested. In fact, we've used it probably for 30-some years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wanted to add one other thing to you. If you're getting air blowing through your walls and you feel that you might be getting more air through your electrical boxes, because Back when they built your house, they probably didn't use any sort of solid foam behind the boxes.
Pretty much, yeah. So, there's a lot of that and around windows, but the electrical outlets, that's for sure.
So you'd be surprised how comfortable you can make the house just by insulating those. If you can get behind them while you're working from the outside, that's ideal, and just squirt some expanded foam like Great Stuff or one of those products behind the box. Or if you can't get it from the outside, just put a little, they've got these insulated closed cell foam backing pads you can put behind the plates. They're not quite as good, but they do work.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in today as we talk home renovation and repair with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard answering your phones today, our producer for the program. Great to have him along and great to have you listening in. Give us a call. I should note that one of our computers is down, the computer that takes your questions via email. So we can't take email questions today, so you'll need to phone in instead. And the call-in number is 1-800-642-1234. And let's turn to Tom in Appleton now. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. I have about an 8-year-old home with a walkout basement. I'm in the process of finishing that off. And notice, like the squares of batting that are put on top of the wall between the floor joists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Pull those back and... It's not present now, but it appears as though there's been moisture there. There's black spots on the rim board that caps the end of the floor joist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm going to make that better or worse when I close that ceiling off. I don't really know how a person would ventilate it or get any airflow through there. Just wondering what you'd recommend for that.
Well, you know what happens there is that when the house is first built, it takes several years for the concrete to cure in the basement, and so you've got a lot of moisture in your basement, and the area behind the fiberglass to the outside is cold, so you get moisture that works its way through, condenses, and then it sits there and you get mold. What we've done when we do that is we'll take the insulation out and we'll spritz the mold to make sure it's dead with a 10% bleach solution. Let it dry thoroughly, and then either replace the insulation, or if there's mold on the insulation, we'll just put new stuff in. If you put new stuff in, if you can afford it, go out and get it like a two-part polyurethane spray foam that goes in there, and otherwise fiberglass would work okay for you.
Okay.
And then once you put your drywall and your vapor barrier up inside, you shouldn't have that problem anymore. Is there anything else you want to add, John?
I'm thinking, Ken, that it's possible that this condensed out the first year the house was built.
Probably, yeah.
We had a lot of moisture coming out of the basement floor, the basement walls, even while you were living there, Tom.
Okay.
And that may have gotten up there and condensed the first year, so you might not have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be absolutely sure, take a good close look at it and make sure that it's all condensation, that you don't have some sort of leak from the exterior due to a faulty water barrier that's draining into there. If it is just condensation and if your basement is 40% or lower, I don't think you have to worry about it reoccurring. I certainly concur with Ken about using the urethane spray. That really it's a wonderful air barrier. And the other thing you've got to remember is that when you finish that ceiling, if you have air leaking into those sill boxes, that's like putting a cold air plenum across your ceiling in 50 different locations.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really worth the money to spend that urethane so you get the thermal barrier and the air barrier.
There you have it.
Okay. You recommend like a plastic above the sheetrock before I put that on the ceiling? Or
if you're going to... Yes, you need a vapor barrier to the inside on the ceiling. That would be good.
Mm-hmm.
If you use the foam, you won't need it because the foam will be its own vapor barrier. You might want to check with the local building inspector. Some of them are requiring vapor barriers in
places. Okay, were you talking the spray foam on just the sill around the outside or the entire ceiling?
The sill around the outside, the ring joist. We normally just call that the ring joist.
Sure.
That rings the building.
Right. No reason to insulate the ceiling unless you're doing it for noise.
All right.
Thanks.
And one other little thing, if I may, as far as carpet on that concrete, would you recommend putting down a barrier there first?
Yes. Generally, what we're recommending, if you are putting carpet down there is to actually put a sleeper system in. You probably, 2001, I have to go back and look at the code. I don't know whether you should have a vapor barrier underneath your floor. 99% of the time it's torn. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we can't see that. So, and sometimes you also have insulation under the floor. But if you really want to be safe, the thing to do would be to put a 6 mil poly vapor diffusion retarder down on the floor over some rigid insulation. And the rigid insulation should be like an isocyanate type that has a compression strength of 25 pounds per square inch. Then put treated sleepers over that. And then you can put in like 2x4 floor joists and a subfloor. That is going to keep your carpet warm. It's going to keep it dry, and you should not have any kind of air quality issues over the long term.
Now, sleepers, that's not teenage boys. Now we're
what are sleepers, by the way?
They're furring strips that will hold the floor up off of the finished floor off the concrete.
Cement. Yeah, okay, yeah. Concrete. There you have it, Tom. Thank you for calling. And Ted and Merrill, we turn to you. Hi, Ted.
Hi. We're building a new house, and I got a question as far as finishing off the basement. I've read conflicting things on how you insulate and whether you apply a vapor barrier or not. I've got sheets of polyiso, about an inch and a half, that we're going to use to insulate those parts, and wondering if you offset that from the wall, glue it directly to the wall, apply a vapor barrier, don't apply a vapor barrier. Like I said, I've read a lot of conflicting information on that.
Well, this is John's expertise, but if you can, since you're in the process of building it, if you can get your insulation to the outside of the wall, say 2 inches of foam on the outside of the foundation wall, you're way ahead of the game right now. You're keeping the foundation warm, and you're eliminating the need to insulate the inside of the room.
I agree with you. I agree with you, Ken. The foam against the outside wall, it gives you the best bang for the buck. Some people, at least high on the wall, will add some bad insulation between the studs. I mean, once you get low on the wall, mm-hmm. your foam against the foundation wall really should be quite adequate. The other thing to think about is whether the exterior of the house, I'm assuming you're probably putting in a waterproofing system, and so you may be putting an exterior drain board that also acts as an insulator. So you can sort of calculate what your total R factor will be for the basement. As far as your question, Ted, regarding vapor barrier, I think at this point we are not putting any kind of vapor barriers underneath the sheetrock in the basement. If we have any moisture in that wall system, we want it to be able to breathe out into the room rather than trap it back there where we might be growing mold and mildew. The best system that we recommend is actually a system where we use a treated wood plate at the floor, and then we use steel studs with a membrane separating the steel studs from the wood plate, because then what you have for framing is you have nothing that can grow a fungus. And then use a mildew-resistant or a fungus-resistant drywall. I understand there are several new things out there as far as fungal-resistant drywall. I have not seen tests on them. I don't know how well they work. But take every opportunity to try to limit future indoor air quality problems, because it's amazing how many we get to see every month.
Are you doing anything for a floor in there? Are you thinking about what you're going to do with the floor?
Actually, primarily, we'll probably keep the concrete as concrete, mm-hmm. And stain it or, do different treatments like that. And as far as we've got insulation on the outside of parts of it. When we did the first backfill, we didn't. And in hindsight, that was, something that we would have preferred to do.
Oh, dig
but
it out again.
As we did some other work, getting the plumbing in and all that, then we put it up where it was exposed. Mm-hmm. But now we've still got a couple areas that, don't have that insulation. And so that's why, it's wondering how best to do that.
So. Is your concrete floor already poured, Ted?
Yeah, and it has a vapor barrier and insulation underneath, and we actually brought the vapor barrier up a little bit under the wall, so we could, in theory, tie it into one if we put it in the wall.
That's how to do it, and also to bring the insulation up on the wall, too, so the insulation sort of like an L laying on its back under the floor and then up between the wall and the floor is best.
Correct. So in those areas where I need to still apply insulation, would I apply it directly to the wall and run a vapor barrier, or? stud system like you were talking about.
I think I would simply put on the foam and leave the vapor barrier off. What that vapor barrier is doing is it's trying to make sure we don't have humidity working its way up through the concrete floor.
Okay.
If we do have some humidity come through the concrete walls, we really sort of need to let that bleed off, because your floor vapor barrier is on the bottom of the concrete, which is much more effective than having it on top of the concrete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your wall is, it's going to be on the inside, whereas the outside is where it really helps the most.
Okay.
So slightly different dynamics for vapor diffusion between the wall and the floor.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Appreciate All right. It. Thanks a lot for calling. And here's the number for you to call, by the way, 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question about home renovation or repair. Roberta in Lake Geneva is up next. Hi, Roberta.
Hello, how are you?
Great. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a little information for you.
Okay.
I 3.5 years ago spent the most wonderful $995 I've ever spent in my life on a backup sump pump. It was put in by a company in Whitewater that had put a whole water retention system sump pump into my basement that went all around it because my basement flooded. And it was still, the sump pump couldn't handle some of these horrible storms that come in the Lake Geneva area. So they put this sump pump in, but it's more than a sump pump. It enhances the working sump pump and gives that extra power when the main sump pump is overpowered by the water coming in.
Oh, great. So it kicks in when the other one's beginning
exactly,
to be overtaxed.
Exactly. And
great.
It's the best money I ever spent, because I know a lot of people who spent as much money as I did for just a backup sump pump by the time they got the plumber going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this one, you know, when we get some of these horrible storms like 3-4 weeks ago, that thing is just pumping out water into the side yard that could, you know, fill its own little lake. So I just wanted to let you know that there are products like that out there. And I don't particularly care to give the company I used a free commercial, but because I'm sure there's other companies that have this type of product too. But if you're the only house on the block that's not sitting in a foot of water, it's the best money you ever spent.
I agree with you, Roberta. Thank you very much for calling. And typically, the company that we were talking about, Jacobi, is they refer to themselves as waterproofing companies. So I think that's the term that we were trying to come up with earlier. Roberta, I appreciate the information. Thank you again. And Susie and Madison will turn to you. Hi, Susie.
Hi there. I have a question about insulating my basement. My husband and I just bought a house, and the basement is unfinished, but the garage does take up part of the basement, and the garage is not actually separated from the rest of the basement.
Okay.
It's something we plan to change later, but we kind of get the feeling that the floors are going to be pretty cold this winter, and so I'm wondering how best to try to insulate the basement or what to do to try to keep some of that cold from coming up into the house.
All right.
Once you get your garage sectioned off, and remember that you're going to want a B-label door and a one-hour wall around that garage. So that,
it's a firewall.
One-hour firewall. The information we were giving an earlier caller, I think, probably pertains to this again, is putting down the 6 mil diffusion barrier and insulation on the floor, and then treated sleepers, and then a little 2x4 joist, and then set your wood sheathing on that, and then you can put whatever you want over that, including carpet. The idea is you've got the vapor barrier to control the moisture. If any moisture gets in, what is touching the floor is treated wood, which is not going to decay. And then you have an airspace, and so if there's some moisture in that airspace, it can diffuse up into the room. The one thing that we should have mentioned with the other caller, too, and we didn't, is any time we are finishing a basement, we really want to make sure that the humidity does not get higher than 35% at 70 degrees during the heating season. I've done a bunch of studies, and 40% humidity, it is just amazing how much condensation we get, and we really need to drop it to 35%.
Well, the first couple of years that the basement is curing, it's going to be well above that, too, because the concrete is still curing for at least a couple of years.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm assuming Susie has an older house, because otherwise the garage would
have to be
separate.
That previous caller, I think, had a new...
that's a very good point, Ken. We've got to let that moisture get out of there before we put a vapor membrane over it, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Yep. There you have it.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Susie. And Will and Lac de Flambeau, on to you now. Hi, Will.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Good. I have an older house built in 1946. It's built right up next to a lake. It it doesn't hold paint. It's got, I've been told, it has redwood siding. And the guy that I asked to repaint it started stripping it and said, well, he didn't want to do it because he thought there was lead-based paint underneath, and just recommended that the house be resided. So I'm considering that. Apparently, it's the wood underneath is really good. And I heard you talk briefly about some siding, some cedar siding, that had a 20-year warranty, maybe 15, 20-year warranty pre-finished. And I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. And when if I tear this siding off, is there... If I understand correctly, that's when I should put down a vapor barrier. Is that right?
Not a vapor barrier. You want a wind barrier on the outside, Will.
Oh, okay.
The wind barrier will not let water through, and it won't let wind through, but it will let moisture bleed out through the wall. So, like Tyvek is one that's very commonly used, and old-fashioned 15-pound felt. Also, you know, it's been used for 100 years, and it works very well as well. I think you've got at least three different options there.
Okay.
One is you can look at somebody professionally stripping the house, because there are a lot, you know, the cost of stripping houses has gone down. If this is vertical grain redwood, boy, what would that cost per lineal foot nowadays, Ken?
Well, you could
send the kids through college,
I
think.
If it's the typical type of quality redwood that was put on in the 40s, it's really a high quality siding. And you may want to check to see if there is lead-based paint on it. If you've got a big chip, you could send it off and have it tested. And if there, you know, it's possible that there is no lead in it. So
possible.
Yeah, it's possible. But
most people who professionally strip houses are all lead certified.
Well, that's true.
Another possibility, Will, depending on how well it was nailed, take it off and turn it around.
That's a good idea.
That has been done, too. Now, if it was nailed carefully, and if you can get a flat bar under there and pop those nails, turn it around, re-nail it through the same holes as much as you can, and then use, while it's off, you can put that wind and water barrier on, and then use a non-layering finish, you know, like a stain. I guess we'll end up giving a commercial here, but I think that the pre-finishers seem to have an arrangement with Cabot Stains. Isn't that right, Ken?
Yeah, Cabot's the most popular one.
Yeah, and maybe there are some others, but what is important when you're putting new cedar on is, number one, that it can breathe. So rain screen system is great, and you get information on that from Forest Products Lab. I think it's all online. And secondly, it needs a good coat of sealer on all sides before it's put up. Because if it's really well sealed, you can use some lower grains of cedar, like Select Tight Knot, which actually has knots in it, but they're not going to fall out, you know, rather than the sort of clear redwood that is probably on your house. Because what's on your house now, you can't get except for salvage or at incredible expense. But maybe experiment a little bit. Try popping a piece off. Now, that backside might be rough sawn. But if you're staining it, so what? You're reusing a wonderful old resource. It's only going to last another 120 years.
Why not?
Well, I would like to preserve it. I'd rather not have it painted. I'd rather have it stained as sort of a dark color. We're in the woods near the lake, and I'd rather have it blend in rather than be sort of a bright color. But I didn't realize that it could be stripped and stained. Or is it the only way to stain it is if we turn it around?
No, it could be stripped, and there are paints and stains that are non-layering. There's special ones that are made for old houses. trying to suddenly I'm spacing the name of the company there in southwestern Wisconsin, Racine or Kenosha. Is it American Restoration Products here in Wisconsin that makes paints? It's something like that. But if you maybe Google non-layering paints, I think it's called American Restoration Products, and it's either Racine or Kenosha makes a line of paints. And you know, just do a little bit of web searching. You're going to find things that don't layer, because what's going to happen with this 1946 cottage, because you don't have interior vapor barrier, you're continuously going to have moisture going through the wall.
Yes.
What's happened with that now is you've got so much paint on it that that outside paint layer can't breathe. So what's happening is that the moisture is just popping it right off.
Now, John's also mentioned rain screen system a couple of times in the show, and maybe we should just tell people what that is, because I think maybe some people may not know.
Go ahead. I just designed it, and you have to put it on.
It's basically a system that you put your barriers on, your air barriers underneath, and then you use a furring system to hold the siding away from the wall. And at the bottom of the siding and at the top of the wall, you have screens that actually allow air to pass through but won't allow bugs in or rodents. And that allows moisture to wick away. It allows air to freely flow around the siding, and it adds, you know, dozens of years in some cases to a paint job, and probably decades to a good quality siding job.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much for your help. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Yeah, let us know how that comes out, Will. If you're able to take a couple of those off and those are salvageable, we'd like to hear it on a
future program.
Future program.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you quickly, is there as far as you know, a market for that siding? What I would call a 10 or 12 inch reveal, which is a little large for the scale of the house, and mm-hmm. I was thinking of trying to go to a smaller reveal for the shiplap.
Well, you could do that with that siding. You just overlap it a little more. A little closer if you're going to use that same siding, but there should be markets out there. Here in Madison, there's a place that used to be called Deconstruction, and they will buy the material and store it for some future use. Somebody will come along in a future date and look for it. If there's lead paint on it, it might make
that
it a little.
An issue.
That becomes an issue. But if somebody may buy it and strip it. As long as they do it appropriately, you might be able to find a home for it.
And the company name is from Franklin, Wisconsin, and it's American Building Restoration.
That's it.
That's
product.
It.
American Building Restoration in Franklin.
ABRP,
product.
Right.
Mm-hmm. ABRP, and you could just go online. I just did that. That's what I did. I went online and looked it up. It's right there.
Okay, and the one in Madison was called Deconstruction?
That was a company that buys that buys and stores and sells old materials, and
yes.
they may be interested in something like that. There's companies dotted around the state that you might have one in your area.
Great. Well, I'm going to try to save this and use it again, and really thank you all for your advice.
Good luck.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg, our guests here on the Ideas Network. If you'd like to join in, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Our email is down right now, so please use the phones. Bob in Wauwatosa, you are up. Hi, Bob.
Good morning.
Morning.
The heroes to the rescue. We have a 1954 red brick ranch that badly needs a chimney rebuild. Several contractors have looked at it. There are little white hairline cracks all over the brick, plus loose mortar. The contractors think the chimney has already been tuck pointed at least once, and they are recommending a rebuild down to the roof, along with, of course, a new concrete cap. They want to do a poured concrete cap. And I have three questions because there's a difference of opinion among the contractors. And the first question is the thickness of the poured concrete cap. One guy says 4 inch, another guy's quoting 5 inch. I don't know if the 5 inch is worth the extra weight and the cost. I have no idea. The second question is about the flashing around the base of the chimney, above the flashing above the shingles. Mm-hmm. How high up should it be? And one guy says the flashing should be grooved into the new brick.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I don't know whether that's a good idea or not. So that's question number two, the chimney flashing. Question number three, and nobody's really looked at this yet, and that's maybe my fault. I should have had them do it. But if further inspection reveals that there are damaged flue tiles between the fireplace and, say, the attic, how does a contractor go about repairing those? What should I look for? I mean, if there is some real damage, you know, cracked tiles that might constitute a fire hazard or something, what should I look for in terms of how a contractor would go about replacing those flue tiles above the fireplace?
Okay. Three questions.
Okay.
Let's start with John here.
Well, we'll do the real easy one first. Question number two, Bob, was counter flashing. And yes, that definitely should be let into the brick with a reglet. And that counter flashing comes over the top of the step flashing that separates your brick from the shingles. And there should be a little air space between the bottom of the counter flashing and where you see the shingles. As far as the thickness of the cap, I don't have a real good opinion on it. Part of it depends on the quality of the concrete. One thing you want to be sure of is that the cap is bigger than the masonry. In other words, that the cap overhangs, and ideally it should have a little drip kerf in the bottom so that water drips off. I mean, the reason your chimney's in bad shape is water has sucked into the brick, and it has then frozen and blown it apart into little pieces.
You know, most of the time those caps are just factory made and brought out by the contractor and mortared into place, unless it's a custom sized chimney.
A lot of the guys that I'm seeing now have these quick forms, and they can
form them up on the spot.
They can form them so quick to an eighth of an inch. It's really pretty amazing how well they've done.
That's what they want. That's what they want to do on our chimney. But
right.
One guy says he's going to do a 4-inch thick cap, and another guy a 5-inch. I don't know if it matters or.
I don't think it does.
Aesthetics would be the only thing.
Yeah,
right?
And the question is, how big is the chimney? Do they want to put some pitch on it? It could be that if they want to get some pitch, if you have a large chimney, as some ranch houses did, that 5-inch works better because you can get a little more pitch in it. As far as the flue damage, you're probably not going to know everything until you start taking things apart, and they're simply going to have to go down and replace the clay flues. If there has been a chimney fire and they're shattered, you could be into something major. If you don't have, if you've got a metal animal screen and rain hood, you should probably remove that, get a good strong light and take a look down there and sort of see what you can see. If you don't have a tremendous amount of soot, you can usually get a pretty good idea as to the condition of your flues. Usually what we find is the one that the furnace and water heater went into is in worse shape than the one with the fireplace due to condensation damage.
Okay, quick follow-up question. What's pitch on a chimney?
At least an eighth of an inch per foot, preferably a quarter inch per foot.
Pitch?
On the top of the cap.
On the top of the cap.
You want
so that the cap drains water off.
On the top of the concrete cap.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
All right, there you have it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Thanks for calling. And John in Sparta, we're on to you now. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm remodeling a home that was built in 1883, and I completely gutted it. So now I'm looking to insulate, and there's cellulose, fiberglass, spray and foam. Just an opinion what you guys think would work best.
Well, your walls are probably... probably 3 5/8 or 4-inch thick 2x4s.
Well, actually, I furred them out another inch and a half to get around 2x6. You know.
I see. Okay. Probably the best bang for your buck would be cellulose, not just a regular cellulose, but a dense pack cellulose. They put a screen over the inside of the wall, and then they cut a little hole in and they blow the cellulose in so that it's under pressure and it fills the cavity, actually overfills the cavity. My second choice would be the two-part polyurethane foam. There's some code changes that are coming into place now. I'm not so sure you need to fill the entire cavity yet, but that may be coming up shortly. So you might want to talk to your local building inspector and see what the code is on the thickness that you want to put that in of the two-part foam. That's going to be more expensive, but it's a very very good vapor barrier and insulator. I wouldn't do fiberglass.
I've heard spray and foam is pretty flammable.
It's flammable when you are spraying it, and once it cures, its level of flammability goes down, but you are required to have a half hour, is it a half hour or 15 minutes?
15 minutes,
fire barrier on the inside. Drywall is what, half-inch drywall is a half an hour, so
yep.
You have plenty in there. That's the direction I would look. I would look at cellulose first, foam second, and I would discount fiberglass at this point.
All right. Okay, real quick, I've heard the cellulose packs after a while, settles, maybe.
Not in the dense pack form, because it's overfilled, it's put in under pressure, and because the, preface it by saying there are two ways to put it on. One is to put plastic up and to blow the foam in. The other one is to put this screen that has air in it, that allows air to pass through and blow it. That's the better way to do it.
And with that, we'll take a quick break. I'm Larry Mueller with my guests Ken Adams and John Freiberger here on the Ideas Network. Well, if you're thinking about doing a little renovation on your home or a little repair, you've come to the right station here. Larry Mueller with my guests Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison. John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg, our guest today to talk with you about those kinds of issues. You can join us at 800-642-1234. And before we take some more calls, we want to go back to that caller who was renovating an old home. And John, you wanted to add to something to what Ken had to say.
Yeah, we were talking about John at Sparta during the news break and wondering if John was also redoing the exterior. Sort of concerned about wind barrier because some of these 1883 balloon frame houses get an awful lot of air through the wall, and a guy could insulate that pretty carefully and still have sort of a drafty, cold house. So I was going to just switch my top two with Ken and say that if John isn't redoing the exterior, he may want to spend the extra money for the urethane foam because that's going to give him an air barrier as well as the thermal barrier. But maybe he's already doing the exterior or has done the exterior, in which case Ken's advice is the best.
Okay.
So there, yes.
So one or the other. Okay. So I hope John's still listening. Let's go to Jill in Racine. Jill, hello to you.
Hi, Larry and John. First, just let me mention that there is a store that has non-toxic cleaners, rugs, insulation, paint, if people are interested in that. It's Safe Building Solutions, and it's in Waukesha.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking to see if they have a website.
I can look that up.
Okay.
Did you have a question?
Yes. We have a 1957 home. And I wish I would have had it inspected. Among other things, we've had to have drainage put in. But the question I have, it had a chicken coop, and part of it we use as a shed for my garden tools, and part of it is an outdoor patio. And it has a metal roof, and the note I wrote down was cap. I think what I need is a 90-degree angle metal piece.
To fit on the peak of the roof?
Right.
And you're asking us what where you can find something like that?
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Well, you know, sometimes those are standard products, but you may, because this is a chicken coop. By the way, I lived in a chicken coop when I was a young man. I lived there was a chicken coop in Williams Bay, converted to a house, and I lived in that for a while. So I'm familiar with chicken coops, but from a very different perspective. Because it's a chicken coop, you may not have standard products on it. And you may need to talk to someone in your area that does that can bend the metal appropriately, and they can bend. They can come out, measure it, bend it, and install it for you. what you'll do is look for a company that does either architectural metals or sometimes anybody that bends metal can probably do this. Do you have something to add to that?
I think the other thing, there's probably some metal building erectors, people who do the pole barns.
Yeah,
like,
they might be able to find the
Morton
right
and Butler. And some of those do have 90-degree roof caps, and they're very inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
So you may want to just check under metal buildings or farm buildings in the Yellow Pages and find one of these companies. They may have the pieces that you can simply have shipped to you.
Mm-hmm. And Safe Building Solutions does have a website from Waukesha.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Dan in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question regarding my basement. Towards the beginning of the year, I had a little bit of water come in. I was wondering where, I'm still trying to figure out where the water came from exactly, because the basement's finished, so I can't look beyond the walls. And I was wondering, is it possible for water to seep through where the, I guess, cement wall and the basement floor meet?
Yes, it's absolutely possible. The first thing, though, that I check in troubleshooting is to look at your gutters, your overhang, and the pitch or the grade of the ground at your house or anywhere in the vicinity of the leak. Because 9 times out of 10, maybe even 99 out of 100, the problem is because of water, of rainwater or groundwater running to the house instead of away from the house. Have you checked that already?
Yeah, actually, that's what I was going to follow up with. I went to the area outside where the water looked like it came from, mm-hmm. and it looked like it had some negative pitch. So I filled it with some soil, and after that, I haven't had water, and I haven't had any water come down since then.
Another thing that happens is in the wintertime when you have snow and ice build up and then it melts, sometimes it'll melt and run down the wall of your house because it's... I had one customer that every time they blew snow, they blew it into one area, and it happened to be piling up against the wall of their house. Well, in the springtime, it was just enough to run down the wall, hit the footing at the bottom of the foundation wall, and leak into their house. So that's another possibility.
Okay. Do you know... The carpet was about 7x7 area that was damp, and I pulled up the carpet and dried out the carpet and replaced the pad.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if I know you guys were talking about I think vapor barriers. It appeared whoever did this basement, all they did was lay the pad down on the cement floor and then just put the carpet over the top.
Yeah, that's typical. It's not correct, but it's typical.
It's typical. Okay. So in the future, should I, the carpet looks like it's in pretty good shape still. I'd hate to replace it right now just because it looks,
looks okay. Yeah.
But
when you go to replace it in the future, do what John recommended if you can do that, and that is to take it up, put a vapor barrier down, put sleepers down, and build a floor above that, and then put your carpet on that. That would be the ideal solution.
And in the meantime, watch your humidity and try to keep it during the heating season to 35% or lower at 70 degrees.
Okay. Hey, you guys happen to know how much a whole house dehumidifier runs at all? I heard somebody talking about that before, and I was wondering if you guys had any experience with that or... if they're good products to get or not.
I haven't. My understanding of water, though, is that it will look for the coldest places in the house. And if you run a dehumidifier anywhere in your house, especially if you run it in the areas that tend to be moist, water from other adjoining areas will tend to find its way there. So I don't know that much about it. Maybe a caller can help with that. Or do you know more, John?
Boy, is it complicated.
Yeah.
I think whole house dehumidification is probably an entire program. If Dan's got an older house, I think a good quality, high efficiency basement dehumidifier, maybe two, is probably probably what he needs, because you start getting into analyzing duct systems and, you know, transfer from upstairs to downstairs, and
my head hurts already.
We don't want to go there.
There is a really a nice low tech solution for people who would like to reduce dramatically the amount of moisture in a basement and reduce radon. And that is, if you can afford to cut a big hole in the middle of your floor and run a roughly a 10-foot diameter hose around, and then connect it to a tube that runs all the way up and out the roof, that's a passive radon reducer, and that will also reduce 90% of the moisture that you have in your basement. It's a great passive solution.
All right. There you have it. Thanks, Dan, for calling. Appreciate it. Jim in Hudson, on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two quick questions. I'm replacing a 20-year-old cedar deck that was originally untreated, and it has end rot and as well as some surface rot. And I'm wondering if anybody can offer a suggestion for a replacement material. I mean, it wouldn't have to be cedar. I don't have to do cedar again. And however, I don't want to do treated lumber.
Sure. Are you talking about the deck itself, correct?
Right, yes.
There are several really nice products out there, composite products, products that are considered green, considered environmentally friendly. There are some name brands you've probably heard. Trex is probably the big one. Timber something or other.
Next Smart, deck.
Next deck. Smart deck is another one. These are very good products. They are, like I say, environmentally friendly. They don't require paint. So cedar tends to, if you paint or stain it, it tends to push it off after a few years, and you have to address that every couple of years. One thing to do to be aware of when you're putting Trex on your steps is you may want to add a couple of extra stringers, because Trex is a little more flexible than wood, and when you're climbing, especially when you're heading down the stairs, your body weight plus your velocity is going to impact it, and to make it last longer and look great, a couple of extra stringers underneath would be a terrific thing.
That's a great suggestion. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
The other problem I have is probably more problematic. I have a crawl space, the height of which varies between 18 inches and 2 feet. It's uninsulated under there. It's under a bedroom. The floor joists are 10 to 12 inches deep. The things I've tried have all been torn down by raccoons.
I'm sorry to laugh.
It's
really not funny.
It's a two-part question. I'll probably never be able to keep the coons out, but you were talking earlier about some blown-in insulation, I think a urethane. I guess I'm wondering if it's possible.
Absolutely. The insulator would insulate under the floor, but then you will definitely have to put some sort of a ceiling material on, either plywood or under the floor. It would have to be a treated plywood if it's so close to the ground level. Or you could replace the skirting around the house to well below grade, so that animals can't dig under it.
Right. So, in other words, if I am able to crawl under there and fasten plywood or treated plywood to the bottom side of those floor joists, a company could come in and drill a couple holes.
They would do the insulating first.
Or they spray it in first.
They'd spray it in first. You would ask them to make sure they leave it clean, because they'll scrape off anything that lays on the bottom of the floor joists. And then you'll have to go in there, or better yet, if you've got a teenage boy or two, put them to work down there, because that's...
No kidding.
It's a tight squeeze. I did my house, and I was... another thing, do it on the either in early spring or in the fall after the spiders have at least one frost, because otherwise you're going to be swallowing bugs.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Good luck to you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Joe in Milwaukee, it's your turn now. Hi, Joe.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Sure. I would like the best way to stucco, kind of like put a traditional stucco on the outside of my house, including insulation.
Okay. John, what do you think?
Yes. Traditional stucco is wonderful. It can last 100 years. The newer systems that we have designed are actually back-drain stucco systems, so you can put, if you have an old house that you're retrofitting, Joe, or even a new house, you can put foam insulation on the exterior, put a drainage plane over it, and put stucco over it. It needs to be correctly detailed. I don't know of any standard details out there. We usually draw our own when we are working with stucco. So you may wish to speak to an architect to have it correctly designed. What the industry offers is there's really seems to be a lack of drawn details. So you are going to need that. But stucco is an absolutely wonderful product. There are some new finishes like Muraltex out of California, where you use a traditional cement brown coat or undercoat, and then you have a acrylic modified top coat that gets rid of a lot of the cracking problems that we used to have. The stucco industry has come up with several new products, new ways of doing things, and it limits the amount of maintenance that old stucco houses require, because old stucco houses with traditional stucco just on wire lath over sheathing and black paper required a tremendous amount of care to keep every little seam and crack filled. The new systems don't have that problem, and if you have the back drain system, it will last a lot longer than anybody in this room will.
There you have it. Thanks, Joe. Thank you for calling. Eunice in Manitowoc is next. Let's go there. Hi, Eunice.
Hi. Two questions. One is, do they know anything about this Cool Plasma Incorporated? It's an ozone treating thing for mold and mildew.
What's the name of it?
Cold Plasma.
Cold Plasma.
From Brookfield.
All right.
No, we're both shaking our heads. We don't know the product.
I haven't heard about it.
An electrostatic precipitator of some sort or another?
Something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to eliminate it says eliminate odors from mold and mildew, but they also claim to kill the mildew. And I don't see how that would
work. I don't know how that could be.
I mean, ozone in indoor air quality is a pollutant.
Yeah.
I mean, adding a pollutant to your house to deal with a pollutant doesn't, it sort of sounds like, taking up alcohol to stop smoking.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like the wisest solution. The problem with mold is you can simply kill it by getting rid of the water.
Yeah.
Mold needs food, oxygen, and water, and the food and the oxygen to be there, but as long as it's dry, the mold is not going to be doing anything.
And if you're concerned about air quality, I would look, before I'd buy a filter, I would look more at a HEPA filter. That's H-E-P-A.
Uh-huh.
Because they're a paper-style filter that air is drawn through, and they have pre-filters of various types, charcoal and dust filters. And they will take out very, very small particles, I think.
One-third of a micron, I think.
Yes, I was going to just say 0.4, 0.5 microns, which is, well smaller than smoke. It's large viruses. They'll take out a lot out of the air. Hospitals use them. People that have respiratory issues, asthma and that sort of thing, use them. And that won't resolve your problem. You still want to take John's advice and make sure you get rid of the mold. But if you're concerned about air quality, that's a very good
question, the mold. We had an ice jam several years ago, and there was down the wall, and the siding and the insulation was all taken out, and it was scrubbed with bleach.
Mm-hmm. That's
good. And there's still, we were told that possibly under the window frame and the inside, it doesn't smell all the time. It, I guess, depends on the humidity.
Mm.
Now, does bleach do a good job cleaning that, and would the drywall we scrubbed, the outside of the drywall, would that penetrate?
No. We very typically find that the backside of the drywall can be really ugly. And Eunice, your comment that when the humidity goes up, it smells, that's exactly what's happening, is it's getting wet enough in there just from humidity and condensation that mold is growing and then it's off-sporing again. So it sounds like your initial mold remediation was inadequate. I think you did. You have an insurance settlement on it, or insurance company help you with it?
No.
Okay.
We never claimed it because it had been in there for several years and
Okay, I think you need to talk to a mold remediant. A remediation expert, because it sounds like you do have a problem, and we have had houses where we've had to take the windows out and to really be able to clean it up. But it sounds like when it gets damp, you've got active mold, and that really can affect your health. So you're going to want to talk to an industrial hygienist. Be careful of mold inspectors. People who take a one-day course and get a certificate are not really mold inspectors. You want to talk to somebody who is an environmental engineer, an industrial hygienist, or somebody who is a very well-known company, not just some cleaning company that does mold remediation, because it is really specialized, and it does sound like you have a problem.
All right.
What about just taking the window out and getting that cleaned out?
If it's in back of the drywall also, we really have not solved the problem. Somebody is really going to have to come and look at that. They might use a bore scope, make a couple little holes in the drywall, take a light look inside the wall. They're probably going to analyze airflow through the wall and other things. So these are all things that a knowledgeable person who really knows what to do with mold and airflow and indoor air quality can cure really easily. And it's the sort of thing where the people who often sell themselves as experts but aren't can take a lot of your money and not cure the problem for you. So be careful, get a good professional, and they will make sure that you get rid of these indoor air quality problems.
Okay, but the bleach should kill the mold?
Bleach does kill mold, but mold can come right back if you have moisture.
If there's still...
Right.
Yeah, get a professional. John's absolutely right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. And Pat in Mosinee, on to you. Hi, Pat.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. Last year we replaced our roof, and it appears that the ridge venting, I think you call that the ridge venting across the top, was removed and not replaced. When we went to check some attic fans where that opening is, I can see shingles. Now, we have venting across the entire eave, but shouldn't that have been replaced? And what is the what problems can we have?
Well, did they put back vents on other parts of the roof, like these 16-inch square vents?
No, we didn't have that. The house is about 20 years old. There was just venting across the tip.
Get your roofer back there to put in a correct ridge vent. That's very important to have. You need to allow air to as it heats to come out in through the eaves and wick away through the peak of the roof. He should have done that. He should have done that. That's the code. If he didn't put those in.
He needs to put them in.
Yep.
There you have it. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And, guys, thank you so much. The time flew by once again.
Yeah.
Got a lot of questions answered.
Thanks so much. Good to see you both.
Good to see you guys. Thank you again. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, specializing in residential renovation projects. John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates, or Consulting, I should say. Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg. Consults for historic restoration projects, water and mold litigation, and as a Wisconsin registered home inspector. So we're really pleased to have them with us. Ken Adams, you can go to Ken at adamsofmadison.com or Frey, F-R-E-I, at chorus.net for one or the other of those guys if you want to get a hold of them. Just to let you know, tomorrow on Garden Talk, Melinda Myers joins us from the Wisconsin State Fair. And in the meantime, go to our online community of listeners at WPR.org. We're asking people to come up with their vegetable recipes. We're in the picnic season. We'd love to hear your favorite vegetable recipes as the garden is starting to produce a lot of tomatoes and other things as well. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.